It's Tuesday, January 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, global investors deal with volatile markets on the first day of trading in 2016.
It becomes very important under these circumstances to try to cool the tempers on both sides.
Tensions sharply rise between Saudi Arabia, Iran, and other nations. Also ahead, a standoff in the United States as anti-government militiamen take over a federal establishment. And we remember music greats lost in 2015. It's all coming up on International Edition. Investors around the world have begun the new year with unexpected volatility as U.S. stock prices fell sharply in Monday's trading following a sell-off in China, a slump in Europe, and rising tensions in the Middle East. The Dow and the S&P fell about 1.6%, while the Nasdaq lost more than 2% at the close of trading. The key U.S. indexes had been down even further in earlier trading. This latest round of global market turmoil began Monday when Chinese stocks plummeted about 7%. That prompted officials to stop trading for the day on the Shanghai and Shenzhen exchanges. The sell-off was sparked by another in a series of disappointing reports on Chinese manufacturing. VOA Senior Economics Correspondent Jim Randall now joins us to help explain this drop.
The thing is that I think investors were disappointed. They saw a sign, some evidence that China's growth is not as fast as they were hoping, that some of the government actions that had been taken to try to boost growth don't seem to be having the effect that that investors had hoped for. And the Chinese markets dropped 7%, which is a lot. That's a lot.
We had other factors influencing this, some tensions in the Middle East that popped up rather abruptly, and that had an effect on the markets. But would a drop like this in China's economy almost be inevitable?
Well, that's a very good question. I think China is going through a wrenching transition from being the world's workshop to being an export-driven manufacturing economy, which helped them grow enormously, tremendously, in amazingly for many years. But there's a limit to how much stuff you can build and sell. Mm. And therefore, they for that and other reasons, the Chinese leadership feels that they need to move the economy toward a more sustainable, consumer-led, consumer-driven, and services-oriented economy. And they're trying to do that, but they're obviously running into some fits and starts and lumps and bumps. And they may be wondering. I talked to one economist today who's an expert in China, and he said the leadership may be wondering today if maybe they went a little too fast.
The transition between the two types of economies is not an easy one. It does take a bit of a process to move from manufacturing to...
Inevitably, there'll be some lumps and bumps and changes and mistakes and starts and stops. But, you know, the economy, economics is messy. And it's really a catalog of human activity. And humans are hard to figure out. They're hard to understand. And they do strange things. They sell. They see the market drop and they sell at when the prices are low. And then they try to get back in as prices go back up, which hurts them twice.
We saw the effects in the U.S. market. The U.S. market not going down nearly as much as what happened in China.
Well, the U.S. market was down over 2%. Key indexes were down well over 2% for a while, and then they eased back. The NASDAQ was down about 2.1% roughly at the close. That's a lot. And the others, the S&P 500, which is a lot of big companies, and the Dow Industrials, which is just what it sounds like, they were down about 1.6%. Now, 1% doesn't sound like a big deal. 1% in one day, yeah, that's a big deal.
The Fed recently raised its interest rates for the first time in many years, and citing that there were strengths or indicators in the economy that were improving, that the United States economy as a whole was getting better, and that was the reason for nudging up the interest rates a little bit.
You got to turn the clock back a little bit and look at the worst of the financial crisis, and that's when the Fed cut interest rates for all practical purposes. It was zero. And the point of that was to make it easy and cheap for businesses to borrow money, and that made it more likely that they would buy equipment to build a factory and hire human beings. And it worked. I mean, the unemployment, that and other things, have caused unemployment to be cut from 10% to the current 5%. That went pretty well. The job market is getting significantly better. Wages are growing, not a lot, but a little bit for the first time in a long time. And the stagnant wages are one of the reasons for the current political anger that's driving a lot of U.S. politics. And so the rising wages, it seems like good news. So for that and a lot of other and growth. Mm-hmm. Growth, as we've gone from shrinking. Recession means the economy is shrinking. And we've gone way past that. We're way far away from that. And the economy is growing modestly, slowly, frustratingly slowly, but it's growing.
Regardless of which way the markets go, up or down, we can always get the steady information from Jim Randall, our chief economics correspondent. Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, time now for our social media segment. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here in Studio 22 with us. And, you know, as many companies are grappling with the market volatility, German automaker Volkswagen is also struggling. But this is because of an emissions scandal. Hello, G.
Hi.
So what's the latest?
Jim, we all knew about the emissions scandal since last year. Well, that sounds like such a long time ago, but actually just a couple of months ago. The latest is the U.S. government suing the company over the emissions cheating. The Justice Department announced Monday it will pursue all appropriate remedies against Volkswagen to address the violations against the country's Clean Air Act. Now, the civil complaint is against six different entities, including but not limited to Volkswagen AG, Volkswagen Group of America, Inc., and Porsche AG.
Well, of course, we always want to hear from both sides. Mm-hmm. What is the Justice Department saying about it on Twitter?
The Volkswagen lawsuit is actually its pinned tweet today, and it reads like this. The U.S. files complaint against Volkswagen, Audi, and Porsche for alleged hashtag Clean Air Act violations. Now, that tweet includes a link to the official statement on the department's homepage at justice.gov, and it also includes a graphic.
Oh, well, what does the graphic say?
It's a quote from the Assistant Attorney General, John Cruden's announcement, and he said, car manufacturers that fail to properly certify their cars and that defeat emissions control systems breach the public trust, endanger public health, and disadvantage competitors. The Justice Department is on Twitter at TheJusticeDPT.
Okay, well, that's pretty solid information from that account. Mm-hmm. What about Volkswagen?
Well, crickets from both the main Volkswagen and Volkswagen USA accounts. Their handles are at Volkswagen and at VW, respectively. It's interesting to note that the American account tweeted, safety is core to our values, and we're happy to see the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety taking notice, sharing a link to the institution's website. But there were no mention of the lawsuits as of now. Jim?
Well, trying to do some damage control to the brand, certainly. Thank you so much, G. And you can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee or at the VOA International Edition account. That would be at VOA underscore IE. I'm out there at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This is VOA's International Edition. The tensions between Saudi Arabia and Iran have already had an impact on global markets, as we just heard, with share prices lower and oil surging. Saudi Arabia on Sunday severed diplomatic relations with Iran after protesters stormed the Saudi embassy in Tehran, following Saturday's execution of 47 people by Riyadh, including prominent Shiite cleric and activist Nimr al-Nimr. In Washington, U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby warned the mass execution risks exasperating sectarian tensions, and he called on regional leaders to de-escalate tensions. Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal told VOA's Victor Beatty tensions between the two countries have simmered for a long time, and there's no mechanism for a cooling down of the dispute, which he warns could lead to a fundamental instability in the region.
It becomes very important under these circumstances to try to cool the tempers on both sides, and that will require external forces coming in, because in neither of the two countries are there any domestic forces which will try to seek moderation or try to solve this problem in a peaceful fashion.
The United States on Sunday urged diplomatic engagement, called for leaders throughout the region to take affirmative steps to reduce tensions. Is that going to be enough, or will the U.S. have to do more?
No, fundamentally more. And tell you why I'm saying this. Because this has been building up for a long time in the region. And as you know very well, that the Daesh, the Islamic State's movement, actually began in retaliation to an absolutist Shia government in Iraq, and which tended to essentially marginalize the Sunnis, who are a fairly significant number and not a very small minority in that country. And that has built into increasingly a Shia-Sunni conflict. That being the case, and now the same thing happening in a place like Syria, and for that matter in Yemen. So the trouble that you see is that even if an attempt is made now to try to cool the tempers, it may be too late, because there's just too many centers of gravity now in the system where these kinds of tensions have now matured. And because they're matured, they've taken a life of their own. For that reason, simply making a statement or asking for diplomatic effort to resolve the problem doesn't work. You have to go well beyond that. And that would mean two things. One, try to resolve the strategic problems that exist in the region, which have spawned things like the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda and others. We may not like it. We certainly will not like it, because that doesn't fit in with the U.S. objectives and interests. But the reality is, may not be the case in the short term, but in the long term, it's in our interest to seek durable peace in the area. Otherwise, there will be problems. So for that reason, we may have to think substantially more. And that means a very clear-cut timetable, a framework to solve the underlying political and strategic problems that exist in places like Iraq and elsewhere, which will then tend to reduce the tension between the Shia and the Sunni. And when that happens, then it will be possible to reduce the tension between Iran and Saudi Arabia, remembering very well that these two countries have ascribed to themselves the right to lead the Shia or the Sunni extremists. It has to stop. The only way it can stop is if there are fundamental changes in our policy towards the region, which will allow for the legitimate interests of the various parties in the region to be accepted, recognized, and worked on.
Zubair Iqbal says Riyadh carried out the mass executions, mostly of Al-Qaeda operatives, with full knowledge of the reaction that it would likely provoke. He says the executions and the reaction to them represents a further deepening of the Shiite-Sunni divide in the region that cannot be resolved from within the Middle East, but rather outside of the region. Meanwhile, U.S. authorities are working to resolve a standoff with a group of anti-government militiamen at a federal wildlife center in the northwestern state of Oregon. The group has occupied the wildlife center since Saturday, protesting a prison sentence imposed on two local ranchers. VOA's Jeff Custer has more.
The loosely organized group of armed protesters say they have as many as 100 people with them at the Mulhere National Wildlife Refuge. They are being led by Eamon Bundy, whose family was at the center of a 2014 standoff in Nevada over grazing rights on federal lands.
When government steps outside of its bounds that the people have given it, that it is the duty of the people to put that government back in its place. We are not putting anybody at risk right now. We're not endangering anybody. We're not harming anybody. So if they did, it would be simply over a building that they would come in and kill.
The refuge occupation is an offshoot of a larger protest in support of local ranchers Dwight and Stephen Hammond, who were sentenced to 5 years in prison for setting fire on federal land they'd been allowed to use to graze their cattle. The protesters are angry that the court ordered the Hammonds back to prison with credit for time they'd already served. A Hammond family statement says the two men only want to turn themselves in and serve out their prison terms. Jorge Calzadilla came from Arizona to witness the event and says he's sympathetic to the group's cause, but not to the occupation.
I ran into a couple of gentlemen, and they asked me if I was associated with them, and I said no. And then they started talking to me, and they told me that they're not happy about this. They're not happy about having these people here. They're outsiders. This is not their community.
Bundy says the case is a symptom of a larger problem. According to him, the U.S. government imposes too many restrictions on land use, causing economic harm. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which runs the Mulhere National Wildlife Refuge, says all of its staff are safe and that the site is closed until further notice. Harney County Sheriff Dave Ward says multiple agencies are working on a solution and is advising people to stay away. Jeff Custer, VOA News, Washington.
Be sure to read more and see the video at our website, voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
As the music world still reels from the New Year's Day loss of singing great Natalie Cole, we look back at 2015 with VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald to remember some of the iconic musicians who remain with us now only through their recordings.
Jim, we lost a lot of great musical talent, and a few of them were especially important to me. Mm-hmm. Back in February, Leslie Gore, who sang It's My Party, passed away from cancer at age 68. And Leslie was really one of the pioneering feminists in pop music, and It's My Party is interesting because it was one of Quincy Jones' first productions. Another great artist who died in 2015 was Percy Sledge, and he sang When a Man Loves a Woman.
When a man loves a woman, can't keep his mind on nothing else.
And I guess you could say that Percy was a one-hit wonder, but what a hit, because that's one of the enduring songs of the past half century. Percy died of cancer in April at 74. Another of the great soul singers from the early 60s was Benny King. He did Stand By Me. He died of natural causes in April at age 76. And in May, B.B. King passed away at age 89. Now, B.B. had been suffering from diabetes for many years, but he still maintained a tireless touring schedule. I mean, he was playing his guitar Lucille right up to the end. And what a great recorded legacy he's going to leave behind. Another great musician was jazz saxophonist Ornette Coleman. I mean, he never had any pop hits, but he was incredibly influential in the field of jazz. And he died of cardiac arrest in June at age 85. And then the month of December brought two huge losses to the rock community. On December 3rd, Scott Weiland passed away from cardiac arrest. He was found dead on his tour bus. He was 48 years old. Scott had sung with Stone Temple Pilots and Velvet Revolver. He was on tour with his latest band, The Wildabouts. And then on Monday the 28th, Lemmy Kilmister, the leader of Motorhead, died of cancer at age 70. Mm-hmm. And so I want to tip my hat to all of these great musicians who left us in 2015.
Absolutely. And we are fortunate because we are the beneficiaries of all the recorded music that they left behind. And we will continue to listen to all of that.
It's a cliche often to say they live on, but they do.
And, you know, you talk about artists who not only were big in their own right, but had such deep influences throughout the industry. Alan Toussaint also passing away this year.
Yes, absolutely. And Alan Toussaint, by the way, if you're a fan of New Orleans music, you should check out Dave Grohl's documentary, Sonic Highways, where the Foo Fighters go to 8 different cities around the United States and record there and talk with figures in the city's musical histories. Alan Toussaint was very prominently featured in the New Orleans episode.
Go out and check the top 20 each week right here on VOA with Ray McDonald. And you can find him on Twitter,
Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray, for stopping by. Have a happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Jim.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com, and we're on Twitter. Follow us at VOA_IE. We thank so much to have our engineer Zeynep Abdel-Rahman at the controls today and our director, Tracy Carter. We thank you for joining us. We hope you come back and visit soon. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In response to the dramatic decline of lion populations in the wild, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recently announced it will list 2 lion subspecies under the Endangered Species Act. The subspecies Panthera leoleo, located in India and Western and Central Africa, will be listed as endangered. Another subspecies, Panthera leomelanocaita, located in eastern and southern Africa, will be listed as threatened. To protect lions and other foreign and domestic wildlife from criminal activity, Service Director Dan Ash also issued a director's order to strengthen enforcement of wildlife permitting requirements. The order will ensure that violators of wildlife laws are not subsequently granted permits for future wildlife-related activities, including the import of sport-hunted trophies. In the last 20 years, lion populations have declined by 43% due to habitat loss, loss of prey base, and retaliatory killing of lions by a growing human population. Coupled with inadequate financial and other resources for countries to effectively manage protected areas, the impact on lions in the wild has been substantial. Through the director's order, the Fish and Wildlife Service is redoubling its efforts to ensure that the world's rarest species are protected from those who violate wildlife laws. Importing sport-hunted trophies and other wildlife or animal parts into the United States is a privilege, not a right, a privilege that violators of wildlife laws have demonstrated they do not deserve, said Ash. We are going to strengthen our efforts to ensure those individuals, people who have acted illegally to deprive our children of their wildlife heritage, are not rewarded by receipt of wildlife permits in the future. The service is also working to increase the fees it charges for these permit applications. The lion is one of the planet's most beloved species and an irreplaceable part of our shared global heritage, said Ash. If we want to ensure that healthy lion populations continue to roam the African savannas and forests of India, it's up to all of us, not just the people of Africa and India, to take action.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.